From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Monday edition of The Drive. It is a beautiful day outside. When you step in it, then you realize, ew, it is.
Yeah.
It is really cold. Yeah,
the first adjective I was going to think of to use. I mean, it does.
Oh, it's beautiful.
The sun is shining.
It is. I mean, it's hardly a cloud in the sky.
Spring is just around the corner, Bill.
Yeah. Baseball is. we're less than 3 weeks away from the start of baseball.
It feels like Apple says it feels like 25 right
now.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We're so much better off than a lot of places. My goodness, my sisters were in visiting from Black Mountain, North Carolina, and waited. They had to wait till the day to try to drive back for the ice to sort of clear some of the roads up there. And I mean, we know that Montgomery got hit hard. Our good buddy Doug Amos called me yesterday and said, "Hey man, trying to figure what we're gonna do. The roof blew off our station, and the tower snapped in two."
Jeez.
Yeah. So I mean, there were some tornadoes around, and I mean, we had some pretty strong winds, but you know, there were tornado warnings all over the place, and so
storms got pretty intense yesterday. Yeah. You know, in downtown Auburn,
the wind was. I mean, it was raining sideways for a while. So yes, I mean, the rain and the storm came through, and behind it, the coldest air that we've had in quite a while. It's going to be careful, folks. It's going to be in the teens tonight.
Yeah. Drip those faucets.
Yeah, that's right. What is the words that start with the same letter that you're supposed to do? You know,
plants,
pets.
Oh yeah,
pipes.
Yeah.
Okay. The three P's.
Yeah, pasta. That's right.
Pasta is one.
Yeah,
of
that's right. Don't leave your pasta out.
Yeah,
I think that's pizza. The pizza will get cold pretty quick.
Some people like cold pizza.
I do. Yeah. I do. I don't have a problem with it.
All right, you know, and it was. We talked on Friday about what a gigantic, like the whirlwind of things going on, and Auburn basketball was at the top of that list on Friday, recognizing the opportunity for Saturday's game in Gainesville, but they were a significant underdog.
They were.
I was expecting a large loss.
I was hoping that Auburn would play well. Yeah. I did not. I didn't expect them to be able to win. I surely didn't expect them to. I mean, they jumped out to that 19-5 lead. Yeah.
That was the to Smacking me that was the,
that's how you, that's what you got to do.
The stunning part was the ease.
Oh.
That Auburn was having in the first half, right? Because like
Keyshawn Hall was just unbelievable there in the first. I mean, he was on pace for, you know, a 160-point game.
if you told me like, all right, Auburn's gonna be a close game with 5 minutes left, and it had been a close game throughout, and you see what happens, like that to me would have been Auburn's path to an upset. You know, I mentioned on Friday, Brian, there's the possibility of a game like this because Florida. Often this year at home in conference play is going to jump out to a big lead and be a lot better than the opponent and sort of cruise to victory. And it's like that was a possibility on Saturday if Florida got out to a hot start and Auburn didn't have it early.
Right.
Instead, I mean, Auburn jumps out, lead gets as large as 18.
Yeah.
Keyshawn Hall.
18 in the second. It was 18 in the second half.
Keyshawn Hall can't miss early on, right? I mean, he scores what, Auburn's first nine?
First 10.
The first 10, I don't know where you even start here. The front court and the battle that you know you're going to have against Florida's bigs, and to win.
Keyshawn Murphy again,
yeah,
really, really played well.
He did.
I mean, Murph, and I think you got quality minutes from Sway and Jovich, and Keyshawn Hall was holding his own down low and doing things to outscore Florida in the paint, and to
Auburn dominated the offensive boards.
Yeah.
You know, in the first half. And then, I mean, they get out-rebounded for the game. But, I mean, yeah, Auburn outscored them by 10 in the paint.
I mean, it was a terrific effort. I thought just coming out there and punching the mouth early was big for Auburn. The way they just took it right at them. Mm-hmm. We're not afraid of their bigs inside. They drove right at them and, you know, just put it up. They got blocked. So what? They just went in there and got the rebound and put it back up. And, you know, I thought it was interesting. Pearl, after the game, said 3 weeks ago we lose this game by 20, I think he said. Mm-hmm. And I think he's talking about when Florida came back in the second half. You know, Auburn maybe didn't have the mental toughness to fight back and still win a game 3 weeks ago. Now they do.
I think he's specifically talking about Missouri too. Like that team, that, you know, the team they brought to Missouri. Maybe he means, you know, the A&M and Georgia era as well. But like that, you know, he mentioned like the way we played at Missouri will get us beat handily most nights on the road in conference play. And when you play hard and when you buy in, and the big misconception I think we all had was, you know, you looked at this team on paper back in August, September, and you thought, well, you've got a team that can go 10 or 11 deep, and they're going to play fast, and they're going to be like a finesse. It's going to be like Euro ball, where they're going to be trying to score 100 and trying to outscore teams and play, you know, threes and dunks only. And instead, I think this team has shown, especially with the fact they've had to cut down to the numbers, and it's really seven guys and emergency minutes from Blake, but he only played a handful against mm-hmm. Florida. But it's like it's mostly on the backs of seven guys, yeah, including two freshmen and a guy coming up from D2, and I think they've really tried to resemble, in a lot of ways, what has worked for Auburn the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Right? It's deliberate, grinded out offense. And it's really buying into winning your matchup defensively and securing the rebound after the opponent misses the shot.
Well, the effort energy, Pearl talks about it all the time, and you saw that against Florida, absolutely. And, you know, I think Jovic, had he not gotten foul trouble, he would have played more. So it's really eight men rotation right now, I'd say. I'm just impressed with this team. I think this team has gotten a lot better. And I think
there's no question.
I think
defensively. Yeah. They have got – it's amazing the strides they've made defensively.
And I think Stephen and his staff have coached the heck out of this team.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it differently if I wasn't on air, you know what I'm saying? But
I
really think they have. I mean, this team, 10 newcomers, if I'm being frank, not a lot of natural leadership, I don't think, at least, that we've seen enough of maybe early with this team.
Well, I mean, I think there's going to be some. I think some of the younger guys
in the future,
really, really have the potential to be leaders.
But they've managed to get this team playing, understanding its identity, like we know what the identity is, right? They have to outplay, out-hustle the opposing team to win games. I know that's their identity. And they've got them playing just outrageously hard. It's just fun to watch this team play.
It's seven when Jovic isn't in foul trouble.
Oh, did I count it wrong?
They had to basically use six.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Keyshawn Hall played virtually every minute of the game. Tahad played.
That's crazy. Yeah, Jovic just had 15. So
Tahad
played
36.
It's because Keyshawn Murphy was playing so well.
And Tahad played 36 minutes. And right now, I think they recognize that. I think that's also affecting their pace offensively. Is that I think they're realizing, like, they're in a situation right now where Tahad Pettiford needs to play every minute, and needs to still have something in the gas tank in the final 5 minutes of the game, and. I mean, that's a challenge for a team that I think wants to you know, pressure teams defensively. But Tahad was a big part of Auburn's answer. Like, was the you have the goaltend that's waved off?
Yeah,
late in the game.
Yeah, he hit those two big shots, those two runners over big men driving into the lane.
Oh,
and right before that, I think he had turned the ball over once or twice. And I was thinking, here we go again.
Yeah, he had the ball down near the baseline, and got the ball got taken away. That as Florida was making that big push.
Yeah, and again, he wasn't shooting threes good again. A 1-for-4. I guess that's not terrible, but you know.
Yeah, but he's shooting. I mean, he's barely shooting 20%.
Yeah.
You know,
buddy, those were big shots.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You know, I mean, those were huge buckets.
You know, to kind of swing the momentum back in Auburn's favor. I think Auburn outscored him 21-11 or something like that over the final 7 minutes or so.
Well, it was tied at 56, so
Yeah, Houck gets the two free throws to tie the game with about 8 minutes left at 56. And then I believe that's when you have the goaltend that's turned into a block and given back to Auburn, mm-hmm. and Tahad hits the floater that feels just like a huge answer for Auburn when that second half had been, I mean, at that point, the second half had been pretty soundly, I mean, Florida.
Well, early on, remember, it went from 15 to 18 early,
right.
The first couple of minutes, yep. of the second half, then Florida, and Auburn didn't seem to be able to get a stop. But then they got a couple of critical stops, yep. as well as Tahad's big buckets.
Oh yeah, no, and you have some offense from, I mean, it's Tahad and it's Overton, who also hits a big one down the stretch. But I mean, it's an enormous win for this group. We said going into the weekend, like, if you can win at Florida, it's not to say that you necessarily will win every game left on your schedule, but nothing on your schedule seems as daunting on paper as going to Florida.
Yeah.
Like, nothing left, yeah. on the regular season schedule for Auburn.
Very true.
Seems as daunting as what they did as the game they won on Saturday. And they didn't win it. I mean, I know Florida could probably say there are things they should have done better. I have some questions about this. Like, I mean, to me, this Florida team, if the bigs, like, the strategy Auburn deployed was brilliant. Like, those bigs have to shoot well from the outside, because it seems like Fland and Lee aren't the most reliable outside shooters. And if you can cram bodies into the paint and try to disrupt Florida's bigs around the basket, and you make Florida hit jump shots from the outside, I wonder how many teams in the SEC feel like maybe they could win that battle, as opposed to letting Florida. I mean, Condon didn't score.
1 point.
Scored one. Yeah, one. I mean, yeah, no baskets.
Until,
no baskets.
Yeah, I mean, right. Until, like, it was 0 for 4, 0 for 5 yeah. from the field. It's like an all conference guy in the preseason, and I just thought Auburn used an outstanding strategy,
yeah,
and outplayed yeah. Florida for
it's
a lot.
Great
of that
coaching,
game.
Great coaching by Pearl and his staff. I thought, but I just
his best game. If
they don't come out with this effort and energy, they're going to lose to Texas, and they could lose to Tennessee, and we're back to below.
They could. Now it's not. That's not to say this is an untalented team, or they have a lot less talent than other teams they're playing.
No.
They have some disadvantages because of numbers and size.
Yeah, yep. They've got to play like that. They got to play like that against Texas, and they got to play like that against Tennessee. I know they can't play like that every week because, as you said, it's seven guys basically trying to put up that effort for 40 minutes. That's a really tough thing to do. But I think that gives them a chance to really be more competitive in the SEC and be an NCAA tournament team and maybe exceed expectations we had of them 2 weeks ago or so.
Yeah, so, I mean, a phenomenal performance, big win, and now you look, and Auburn's over 500. This is the first of that very tough stretch of six conference games coming up. But, yeah. I mean, they go on the road. They've got a couple of road wins now. They've, you know, the heartbreak of that, the overtime loss to Georgia, and then the non-buzzer beater against Texas A&M. They're so close to being right there at the top of the SEC right now.
Much closer to 6-1 than
absolutely.
Know, 2-5. Five, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
and I think Hall's got a shot at player of the week.
He got named player of the week.
Player of the week. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I hadn't seen the news. But yeah, I mean, I came out of the game Saturday thinking, I mean, this is a guy with 43 and 14 in two wins. Two road wins for Auburn, like it he deserves it, and yep. and I don't as important as those possessions down the stretch on Saturday were, when Hall maybe wasn't the biggest factor. The fact is, you needed all those points he scored you at the beginning of the game. You need you ended up needing those buckets early. You needed that production early to get Florida on their back foot, and it's exactly what happened. And he's like. Part of what worked on Saturday, that you wonder how sustainable it is moving forward. To me, the defensive effort is really impressive and can maybe carry over. But Hall was hitting tough shots, right? I mean, he's hitting some tough ones early,
yeah.
And it's like you'd love to think you can always have that, but you needed it Saturday, and you got it. Like he delivered in a huge way. For Auburn.
Well, I mean, they didn't shoot well at Ole Miss, but they won that game, right? So they can win that way.
Yeah, they only go 5 for 15. Who would have thought that Auburn would beat Florida by 9 points, making 5 threes?
Yeah,
I mean, I think everybody thought for Auburn to have a chance, they've got to light it up from outside.
Yeah.
And in part because you suspected that scoring around the paint.
Yeah, you
scoring,
figured Florida would have the decided advantage.
Yeah, Auburn was plus 10 in the paint.
Incredible.
That's unbelievable.
And Auburn dominated the paint. Auburn dominated the area around the basket against Ole Miss. Outscored Ole Miss in the paint by 24. We were sort of joking, like, well, if you can do that against Florida, you got a great shot of winning. It wasn't 24, but they were the better, and I think it's worth saying, like, in two straight games, in three straight games since the loss to Missouri, Auburn has gone out there and resolved that we're going to outwork the opponent.
Yeah.
We're going to outwork you. We're going to outfight you and outsweat you and outbleed you. Yeah, and that shows up in how you rebound and how you defend more than anywhere else on a basketball court.
Yep.
If you have that mindset, and that's what Auburn. I think that's where Auburn has won a couple of games in a row.
Texas Wednesday night. At Tennessee Saturday, and then a week off to get ready for Alabama at Neville Arena. What a couple weeks.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, for a season that felt on the brink.
Oh, it did.
I think not so much Arkansas, but I think after Missouri, that South Carolina game felt like you absolutely had to have it. Like if South Carolina had gone poorly, you would have wondered what the mindset would be in the program, right? From Steven to his assistants to the players, as far as like, how certain are you that this is working? That what you're trying to do is the right plan? You know, what sort of questions do you need to ask? Instead, you do enough to win the South Carolina game, and then you win two huge road games. I mean, Ole Miss is pretty significant in its own right because this team hadn't won a road game all season, and that was an Ole Miss team that really badly wanted, what, they lost 9 straight to Auburn, and it was like, I mean, they desperately wanted that one, and then Saturday, I mean, Bill, like, where's this on Auburn's best? I mean, you went to Bama and won last year in the Iron Bowl of basketball,
right? But you hadn't gone 30 years without a win there,
right? But Bama wasn't the reigning national champion, like,
no.
But this is, and that wasn't. But this team this year and last year are very different too.
Oh, absolutely.
Last year's team felt like a finished product that you didn't necessarily expect to improve, but they had a chance to win every single game, and they went out there with that mindset and they beat teams that saw themselves as Final Four teams. This year's team, so much is new, and so much is still in development with this group. It's hard to say how huge a road win. And it's, I mean, it's a victory for, I mean, when was the last time Auburn went and beat the reigning national champion? Like, you know, it's a pretty significant win.
Oh, absolutely, it is
for Stephen Pearl in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and was it?
It's more like it's sort of reminiscent. Although Kentucky wasn't as good, it's like winning in Lexington after.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Was that last year?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So in 2 years, they've broken those two very long win streaks.
Well, Stephen able to do something his dad never did, never was able to, and that's winning down in Gainesville.
Yep.
And he's beaten. I mean, the list of coaches that Stephen Pearl has had to face at this point in his career, and the guys that he's beaten who have been to the Final Four, guys like, Chris Beard has been to the Final Four and Stephen Pearl beat him this year. The Oregon coach, Altman, has been to the Final Four and Stephen beat him earlier this year. Now you've got coaches with, Chris Beard has been to the Final Four and Stephen beat him this year. And now you've got, you know, think about Calipari and Patino. Right, national champions.
Yeah.
Todd Golden, three national champions now that Stephen has beaten as the head coach of Auburn and to win in Gainesville, and it's not like you say they're the reigning national champion, but they're a shell of their former selves.
No.
Like they miss Walter,
those guards.
Yeah, they miss Walter Clayton.
Oh, they miss Walter Clayton. Sure,
they miss Walter Clayton. He was hitting big shots that Florida needed down the stretch that they weren't getting from Fland and from Lee, but they were considered the best team in the SEC going into Saturday. I think folks still might say they're clearly one of the two or three best, even if, I mean, look, maybe they're still the best. I don't know who's going to win.
Their guards were playing well until they played Auburn. I mean, they're starting to play better.
I don't think anybody had A&M in first place on January 26th in the SEC a couple of weeks ago, Bill. Like, I think A&M being in first place right now feels like a, you know, it's something that nobody would have predicted. But like, no, I mean, this is a big win, and you want to see how Auburn builds on it. But just to go down to Gainesville and not just win, but outplay, like outplay that team in a lot of important ways, says a lot about this group.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We'd love to hear from you. Give us your thoughts on that. Anything else, though? There's an awful lot for us to be talking about here on the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls as we get things underway here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Brian. We got Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. Brian, it appears that Auburn is about done in the transfer portal, at least yes. for now.
39 in total, and they had a little late run there. They picked up another couple of tight ends, which is crazy. I think they have seven scholarship tight ends, which is a lot.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm interested to see how that works. I guess we'll be seeing a lot of two tight end sets.
Yeah, you see H-backs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they added another offensive lineman from Miami, another young kid with more years of eligibility mm-hmm. left, so that's good to compete. So have they brought in the veterans on the offensive line, they brought in those.
Yeah, they've got like 17 or 18 offensive linemen now.
Do you guys get the feeling that they've maybe signed? I mean, we'll see who develops from the young holdovers on the offensive line, but like they may have signed five starters out of the portal on the offensive line. They may have brought in Cole Best.
The Coles from both, South Florida.
Both of the Coles feel like starters.
Best and Skinner.
Big Joe Simmons from JMU feels like a starter.
Stanton Ramil.
Yeah, Ramil from Michigan State. Yeah. The fellow from Oregon State, you know, can move around. Jack Lehrer can move around. Like you've got some you've got another big guy from Miami coming in. Like you've got some.
Tell you what. Big guy is pretty much look at the size of these guys too. I think there's only one of the incoming transfers is under 6'4", and they're all 300 plus.
Yeah.
They've got six veteran offensive line transfers, five seniors, one junior. That's Ramil, right? So, I mean, five of those six could be starters, but they did sign some pretty talented young mm-hmm. folks too. I think the redshirt freshman from Ole Miss mm-hmm. or maybe no. Wait, that's the defensive line.
Yeah, he's defense. Yeah.
Who is it? It's the Kenneth McManus. Where is he from?
He's from Miami.
Okay,
isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, McManus.
Well, but I'm also thinking like an Ellis.
No, Plaz is from Miami.
Right? Yeah.
McManus is from there's so many of them. It's hard for me to remember where they all came from.
He is from Akron.
He's from the MAC, right? Yeah.
But
he started a lot of games for
as
them.
A true freshman, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
so he's in the mix too.
I love the young guys that got in. So they not only took care of potentially their starters this year, unless one of those young guys steps up, but they've also got guys who can return and be starters next year and the next year, which is what you want instead of having to bring in a bunch of starters every year.
And it would be fantastic news, I think, if Auburn had a Cale Ellis or a Ward or a Ty Buster step up and really push for playing time, you know, themselves. But you've also got. Seems like you do have a lot of veteran options that you've brought in from the outside, and a lot of those guys seem to project as starters.
No question.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it, and Paul gets us started. Hey, Paul.
Hey, guys. A couple quick questions. If Stephen Pearl were to become available now, how hot of a name would he be in the coaching circles?
Well, I think they're – Yeah, I think the – that win Saturday quieted a lot of the critics, and yes, I think it opened a lot of folks' eyes as to wow, what he's doing against the schedule that he's seen thus far this year.
I think he's done a pretty damn up job, personally. Second question, of the transfers, are any of them going to be summer enrollees, or all of them already here and working out and getting in shape?
As far as I know, they're all either here or will be here for, you know, this semester, spring practice, all that. I don't know of any that will not be here until this summer.
Right.
Yeah, I think our understanding is of the portal guys, like of guys that were playing at a different D1 school last year, I think all of them are enrolled.
That's the expectation.
Yeah, the expectation. They'll all be enrolled.
They'll all go through winter workouts.
In January. And I mean, I guess there could be, like, from the high school class, there could be questions as to who's enrolled now and who's going to get here after graduating in May. But, like, I think from your D1 transfer class, I think they're all going to be here in time for spring ball.
Yeah.
Are there many of those high school guys that are going to be summer enrollees? Are they all here?
There are some. I don't know who is and who isn't.
Of the high school?
Yeah.
I think there are two high school, two of the signees. I'll have to look back and see. But if I'm not mistaken, I think all but two are in school now.
There you go.
Wow. Because I remember back in the day, it's just rarity to get one here before, yeah. And now they all are.
Think about that. That's close to 60 new guys coming in for the spring term.
It is. And I guess the roster's well over 90 now.
Yeah, I've got it at 94, I believe.
Yeah, how about that? And that means potentially 90 scholarship players here for spring ball. That's an unreal number.
It is.
That's unreal. I mean, a lot of springs, when I first started covering this team, it was, you know, a
50.
Lot of, yeah, bare bones. Yeah,
you know, 50, 60, yeah. Because you're waiting for the guys to come
right,
in.
Exactly.
Yeah. In the fall.
That's a big difference. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Appreciate it, Paul. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. We're just a quarter of the way in to the Monday drive.
321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian here on this good-looking, but it is a cold Monday. Yeah, it's colder than chilly. It's, yeah. It's good chilly weather now.
Yes, that's true. Very true. Yeah. I still need to get that recipe from you.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'll be glad to do that.
You're going to try it again soon, right? With, you know, after...
Yeah, after the... I had sort of a disaster last time.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man, it was... I don't know what to blame it. It's me. No, I mean, the thing is, you know, you brown the ground beef, and then you have the other ingredients. And Kathy was cutting up the tomatoes, and I was opening cans of dark red kidney beans.
Yeah, delicious.
And she added the tomatoes, and I thought I reached for the kidney beans. I grabbed a can of the grease, the can that I...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That, it was tough. Trying to
come back from that.
Don had a couple of tips for me. It's like, he said, you know, I'm trying to, like, with a ladle, I'm trying to get the grease off the top. Don said, just put some bread on the top of it that would soak it up.
That's a good idea.
I didn't do that. I mean, it's still, I mean, I got most of it off, but it was not quite the same. Not quite the same. So I'm anxious. I may go ahead here in the next day or two. And, I mean, it's going to be cold. Going to be cold all week.
Yeah.
So I may in the next day or two make another another pot. So.
Yeah. It's going to be cold. Tell me about it, Bill.
Yeah, you're heading to even colder weather,
where are you
right?
Going?
We've got Marshall on Wednesday night. So we're headed up to Huntington, West Virginia.
Oh,
would you guys like to play a game called... what is the current temperature in Huntington, West Virginia?
Well, let's see. I can.
I'm going to go with the real feeling.
I'm going with 8.
I'm going with 6.
Okay.
Bill is correct. It is the real feel right now is 6 degrees.
Wow.
Because it was 8 when my sister checked Black Mountain earlier in the day.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, let's go a little further north and drop a couple more degrees.
And you got single digit lows all week. So we're going to be there. We're flying in there tomorrow. Playing there Wednesday night. Those are two of the top teams in the league too. So Troy and Marshall on Wednesday night will be a good one for trying to stay near the top of the Sun Belt standings. Troy's 7-2 through 9 games in the belt. But you've got and then we got Myrtle Beach after that. Coastal.
That'll be better.
Coastal on, yeah, on Saturday. So so that'll
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be like balmy and you're going to put on your trunks and head out to the beach.
It, you know, but
it's going to be pretty cool.
But it won't be West. But it won't be West Virginia.
Yeah. No, but I bet it'll still. I bet it'll still be there'll be sub freezing nights.
It, yeah, but if you get near the beach and you're inside, you can just pretend it's nice.
If you're inside,
outside.
Yeah. Yes, the thing is, when you're near the beach and it's really cold, it can really, that wind can just slice you.
The way media days for me means, you know, it's going to be a lot of. A lot of Dr. Pepper in the in hotel lobbies. You know, this one is. I feel like I see a lot of cocoa in. I see a lot of hotel cocoa coming for me in the next.
I still got a nice coffee today.
I'm gonna be making my own waffles in the morning at the hotel hotel breakfast, and I'll be slugging that cocoa for a couple of days, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right, so that's the plan. Dan will be out for the rest of the week. I'm not planning on going anywhere.
It's 45 in Conway right now. So
that's not bad.
Yeah, Myrtle Beach will probably be pretty
pleasant.
Good bit.
That's warmer than it is here.
Pleasant by the end of the week, yeah.
Yeah. All right, 334-321-1390. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise? The Super Bowl matchup is set. Is everybody excited about the Seahawks and the Pats?
I mean, it's not the same old Patriots.
No, by all means, it's not.
You don't have Belichick, you don't have Brady, you don't have, you know, that core that went to the, 10 Super Bowls together, whatever it was. But it's a team that it's new, right? I mean, I don't remember the last time we had a Super Bowl where it was like two guys who'd never played in a Super Bowl before, like looking for their first title. Yeah. Darnold versus May, you know, after a lot of Mahomes and a lot of Brady and a lot of Manning in the Super Bowls these last few years. Like this is something decidedly different. And we'll see we'll see how it goes. Drake May's really good. Like that Drake May's awesome, and I know people look at Darnold with skepticism because it did sort of come out of nowhere before last year in Minnesota, but he's played great in two playoff games against. I mean, look, going through the Niners and the Rams, like you earned your spot in the Super. I know the Niners had some injuries, but like that was how you were going to get to the Super Bowl, and the Seahawks faced down the challenge of the LA Rams last night, and it's I know it's familiar because like one of the most famous Super Bowl moments ever is the Patriots interception. Of Russell Wilson in a Seahawks Patriots Super Bowl almost exactly was that a decade ago, 11 years ago, something like that. Like it's right in that ballpark. And so now you've got another Rams Seahawks Super Bowl, but this one's different. And yeah, what a huge win. It would have been cool to see Jarrett Stidham pull off.
And I thought he played pretty well.
He got to a great start, didn't he?
He really did.
I've never seen the weather change like that.
Golly, it was unbelievable, man.
Where it was like it seemed nice and like it seemed calm on that first.
Yeah, it looked like a pretty day, and then man, it's blizzard.
It was blizzard conditions, and like the people facing the wind could barely open their eyes. Like you're gonna remember that game when. The entire NFL is playing in a dome, right? Event, like it's gonna be games like that got us there. But it was, it would have been cool. Would have been cool for Stidham to make it happen.
Yeah. Let's get to the phones. 334-321-1390. And Yellowhammer is up next. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. I was just curious. I didn't get to see the game, but I was on YouTube, saw some highlights, and. There was no Bo. What happened to Bo?
Oh,
Denver, you know.
Yeah, he broke his ankle in the overtime.
The second to last play,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, late in the overtime in the win. So that's why he was unavailable, yeah.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. It was pretty big news right after the Broncos-Bills game Bo Nix had suffered a leg injury on that overtime drive and was going to be out for the rest of the playoffs. Had surgery earlier this week. We were talking about, I mean, it's I don't worry too much about Bo's future. Like, that guy is going to be fine. I was saying it after he got hurt at Auburn. It's like he's going to be like – Bo Nix is – you know, he's – I think he's got – not only does he have a pretty good head on his shoulders, but, like, he's got a lot of football ahead of him much as he wants to play. Yep. It would have been – it was a big moment for Jarrett Stidham stepping in, who hasn't played – hadn't thrown a pass since Bo Nix joined the team. You know, spent 2 years – as the emergency option in case something happened to Bo. I thought made some good looking throws, especially before the game turned into an ice bowl. Like, you know, it was early on, I thought Stidham was making some pretty good passes, and would have loved to see him pull off the huge upset and start the Super Bowl and have this underdog story. I think a lot of folks would have been in on the underdog story, but the thought that it's an Auburn quarterback who's suddenly in this unlikely position would have been a lot of fun. But alas, Patriots win, and it's a battle of two of the top young quarterbacks in the league trying to win their first.
Well, orthopedically, Super Bowl. A broken bone is far better than ligaments and tendons.
Oh yeah,
so. Yeah. I think so the number they said earlier this week, 10 to 12 weeks before Bo is. Cleared for any sort of like football related activity, just because I think there were folks wondering if there was a chance if Denver had won, like, were they going to be able to inject Bo with the super stuff and get him in the Super Bowl? You know, was he gonna be able to come back after 3 weeks or something like that? And they made it pretty clear, like, there was no chance of that happening, but he should be ready to go well in advance of the start of next season.
Well, I know the field goal kickers are kicking themselves. They had a hard time there.
Yeah, I tell you what, just imagine. I'm just thinking, trying to kick into that, though, with the wind and snow blowing, you know, right in your face for a couple of those. And even when it was at your back, I mean, you could see it affected the ball. There were a couple that looked like, oh, they're good. And all of a sudden, no, they're not.
Affected those passes, too.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right. Well, thanks.
Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. Yeah, I was thinking about it while it was going on. It's like you haven't seen as many of those ball games. I mean, that's the way it used to always be. You know, and just the thought of not just throwing, but catching passes when you've got conditions like that.
Or just getting hit, right?
Getting
tackled on what can't be, what can't have a lot of give to it at 0 degrees. Just some brutal conditions around the NFL. Yesterday and some, well, I mean, mostly just in the Broncos game, yeah. but around the country, I mean, that storm this weekend, I mean, we got more of the thunderstorm branch of it than cover your town in 6 to 10 inches of snow variety of it. But I was telling Justin, like, of all the places Auburn could be playing on the road this weekend, while Florida has that mythology of, I mean, yeah, Auburn hasn't won there in 30 years, and they're the reigning national champion, and it's a tall order, literally, to try to face them down. From a travel perspective, you'd probably rather have been going to Gainesville than anywhere else in the SEC this weekend, right? The thought of trying to get to Lexington, Kentucky,
Gainesville, or Auburn,
right now, or yeah, exactly. Like, maybe it was okay in Baton Rouge. Like, I haven't seen you know, any snowmen being built down there, but like, no, but most of the conference and most of the country was dealing with some stuff that, and you don't think about it, but like travel woes that like seriously disrupt your schedule as a team trying to play. You know, if you got like 72 hours before your road game, or 48 or whatever it is, depending on when you leave, like if you have to suddenly spend a lot of those waiting on the roads to clear, or waiting on your plane to arrive, or things like that. Like, it can throw everything off. You know, when coaches talk about, oh, we lost this game way before the game started, you know, energy was off at film, and energy was off at shoot around and all that stuff. Like, you know, travel complications can add to that. That can contribute to that sort of thing, especially for a younger team. And so, yeah, I think that it was probably a blessing for Stephen Pearl and for Auburn that you weren't headed into the thick of it, right? You were headed into you're headed into something downright tropical compared to what a lot of the country was dealing with.
Yeah, well, it was quite the fun trip south for Auburn. There's no question about that. All right, let's get to our final break of hour number one. Again, love to hear from you. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390. Brian's with us. It's Monday, so we'll get to his Monday musings coming up in hour number two. So stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickerson.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment of hour number one here on this Monday. A Monday where Auburn coming off a big win, now getting ready to take on Texas back at home at Auburn Arena, and we'll hear from Stephen Pearl tomorrow.
That's right.
He's got to be. I mean, I can't imagine something. I'm going to record a podcast with Ferguson later tonight, and he was there in Gainesville, and I'm looking forward to just getting a sense of like what the energy was like right after that game. And I can't imagine what that bus ride and that plane ride was like for those guys. And I imagine the celebration maybe even continued when they got back to Auburn on Saturday. So, I mean, this is a big win, and they deserve to celebrate it like a big win. It's not – the battle continues, right? Like, it's not like you've – nothing's final because you beat Florida. Like, the race isn't over.
Oh, no. But now you know – yeah, and this team knows – they can beat anybody they've got left.
Yeah. Anybody, yeah.
I think he's going to be more reserved. Hey, that was you better understand that if you don't go out there and play like that again, you're going to get beat by Texas.
Yeah, that's why he said, if we played like played against Missouri, you lose by 20.
There does feel like there's been a style shift, though. I mean, I talked about it earlier, but we expected this team. I think because when you looked and you saw that. That you expected minutes for Magwood and Simon Walker and Bashir, and you thought that this team would be more up-tempo and high-flying, and they've decided, no, we're going to be a team that is willing to grind you down. We're gonna run deliberate half-court offense with paint touches for the bigs and open shots for the guards when they have them. And on defense, I mean, it's a lot like the approach of last year's team.
Yeah.
Like, the names have changed. You know, Todd's back, but everybody else is sort of different. But, like, I think they feel now that the way Janai needed a touch around the basket on virtually every possession, and mm-hmm. you sort of created from there, I think they're comfortable using Keyshawn Hall in that sort of role and letting the offense develop. And then there are also possessions towards the end of the game where it was all Todd. And it was Tahad, run some clock and find yourself a good shot and take it with some rebounders in position, and he hit some. They're towards the end.
You know what was amazing about Keyshawn Hall's game against Florida? He played the 39 minutes, right? Had the 24 points, but he had 4 assists, 7 rebounds, a block shot, 2 steals, and just 2 turnovers in 39 minutes. That's just the amount of times he touched the ball and handled the ball and dribbled the box, two turnovers. That's really, really impressive.
Yeah, I mean he's critical, and he's just very deserving of being the SEC Player of the Week, which he was named today.
Yep. And it's huge. I mean, the second half, it's not. I mean, I think Florida made adjustments.
Oh yeah, I mean they really concentrated on shutting down Keyshawn Hall.
Yeah,
who and he only scored 2 points in the second half. Yep.
They start throwing doubles at him, and they start making him. And that was something earlier in the season that Stephen mentioned. A&M and Missouri both had success with just really throwing ball pressure at Keyshawn Hall and expecting him to not always make the right move coming out of the double team. And in the second half, while Auburn did have a stretch where Florida's able to get back into the game from down double digits, the fact is, like, this is Keyshawn Hall was still getting those touches, and he was setting up his teammates,
yep.
and he was doing a lot of the right things without scoring, and it was a huge step in the right direction for an Auburn team that I think needed, you know, they'd already beaten some good teams. St. John's is good, Arkansas is good. I think believing winning at Ole Miss is a nice win.
Yeah,
this was something special.
Yeah, this is different. This is something really really special, and I think they know it.
All right, we're halfway through here on the Monday Drive. Plenty of time for you to join in hour number two, which is coming up.
From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Had a good weekend. It was scary for some folks. We had some rain. We had some wind.
We did.
We did, at least as far as I know of, here in the local area, the immediate area. I didn't hear of any real damage.
No, my trash can got blown over.
Yeah, I had a bunch of things. I had a bunch of things blown around.
That was it.
But the funniest, the strangest thing I had, my flagpole bracket broke.
Huh.
I went outside the flagpole expecting to look, you know, it's like, oh, I should have pulled the flag in. And I should have.
Yeah.
Because the flag and the pole were lying in the bushes in the front yard. And I thought, well, let's see, I'll have to get a new pole. No, the pole's fine. It was the bracket.
Interesting.
So it's like, I've got to figure out how I'm going to get those stripped Phillips head screws of the bracket.
That's always fun.
Yeah, that's not going to be fun. But anyway, yeah, hope everybody came through it all right. As we were saying, some folks wondering why there was no Max Roundtable today is because of damage over in Montgomery, where the roof of the radio station was blown off and the tower was snapped in half. So yeah. They're working, we're trying to figure how we can help Doug get back on as well. As soon as possible. So, we'll let you know when something is ready to go. But he'll be back on as soon as he can. But we're here with you on this Monday. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, Drew is at the controls. I'd love to hear from you. Your thoughts on anything that happened over the weekend, including a huge win for Auburn basketball down in Gainesville, a place where the Tigers had not won in nearly 30 years. It was February of 1996, the last time Cliff Ellis.
Yep.
When Cliff Ellis took the Tigers in and they won on a buzzer beater.
And I think Steven even made reference to the fact that, like, the historical significance means a lot to people who have followed the program for a long time. I don't think with a team full of guys where it's like Tahad was here last year, and none of the other guys, you know, had ever played more than a year. Like I don't know how many of these guys had ever played in Gainesville before, right? Like, not just in Auburn, but in any uniform. Like, it was sort of an, you know, and that's going to be the case now in major college basketball, where, yeah, I think to a longtime observer of a program, a streak like that is huge. And for these guys, I think it's hard to wrap your head around more than just the 1 year of it all. The fact that Florida is the reigning national champion and the preseason pick to win the SEC, and they were probably playing going into Saturday, they were probably playing like the best team in the SEC. Mm-hmm. And Auburn faced them down, and again, it didn't feel like Auburn, like if Auburn had to hit 23s to do it, or if it had been something out of character for Auburn, you'd say, all right, well, Auburn had a great night. Florida ran into a team that, you know, kept rolling the dice and getting seven. But that's not what, like, I thought Auburn, I mean Keyshawn Hall hit some tough shots early, but it was Auburn doing effort things better than Florida. It was Auburn
taking it to them. Auburn was the more physical team.
Yeah, and defending Florida's bigs you know, physically, but effectively.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, with not getting into serious foul trouble.
Daring the right people to shoot threes and sort of like, I mean, you notice that strategy where like Auburn didn't, like Auburn played five guys inside the three-point line the whole game and sort of thought, all right, well, if Florida's gonna suddenly get hot from the outside and win this game, then you'll take it. Yeah. But don't let them push you around the way they've pushed a lot of teams and the way they're equipped to push teams around, right? With Hauk and with Condon and with Chinyelu and with Hanlogden and with like guys that have proven to be important, effective pieces in their careers. Auburn's bigs just, I mean, you're right. What a game for Murph. And for guys like Sebastian and Jovic, who are playing their first year of college basketball, like true freshman bigs, to take it to Sebastian dunk, right? Like, he's
at the end.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, Sebastian Williams Adams is punctuating it and making big plays, and no, it was just a. It's a great win for a young team that you feel like really took a step forward. Like last year and even the year before, it wasn't so much about that team taking steps forward because you already thought they were capable.
They were there.
Right. Yeah, they were there. This team, it's about getting there. And a win like Saturday is the kind of win that makes you think they can get there.
It does.
Yeah, they're not going to face. I don't think they'll face at least on paper, a bigger challenge than they did going down to Florida. I mean,
probably not. No, I mean they've got.
They're not going to face a more imposing front court.
No, definitely not.
Now Florida, yeah, they may face some teams that are going to try to pressure Auburn even more. Maybe, you know, try to really put pressure on the backcourt more and see if they can. Because since Auburn's really just playing three guards,
yes,
that's something. I mean, we'll see now. Has there been? I guess that's something we could ask Stephen, because a couple of folks have asked me. You know, is Abdul Bashir actually, you know, approaching
right.
game readiness health wise?
I mean, know,
because
guys.
Boy, because that was the thing. It's like, oh, he was. He's finally ready to get out and practice. It's like,
but can you know? Even if he does get healthy, is he good enough to get on that floor right
that's
now?
That's right. Is he going to be able to? Is he going to be able to play defense?
I just with the longer
doesn't feel like it, does it?
The longer they go with seven and emergency minutes for Blake, the harder it's going to be for Magwood or Simon or Bashir to break back into that. I think just because
I agree.
Especially since they're not veterans that have played a lot of college basketball, since they're still young guys. It's tough to now if there's an injury, or if you're talking about like if it becomes an emergency, maybe Steven would reconsider. But I think it's just going to be real easy for Auburn to lean on seven, and the more those seven play together, the harder it's going to be to break someone into that rotation. I think
it is, but what if, you know, what if Tahad's unavailable for a while? I mean, what if he picks up, you know, three fouls in the first half or something? I mean, you're gonna, you know, somebody's gonna have to be able to get in there. I just don't know that you can expect, you know, Blake to have to play 15 minutes.
It sounds like they would play Blake 15 minutes before they played Magwood 15 minutes.
Right now,
Yeah, I think that there were a lot of question marks as far as guys who had never played D1 basketball before on the roster coming into this season. And while I think you're pleased what you've gotten out of an SWA or a Jovic or Elijah Freeman, right? Like you have some guys that are in the rotation and fit right in. You know, I think the Steven and the staff were probably hoping that they'd be able to play one of these guards between Magwood or Walker or Bashir, be able to play one of them effectively and take some of the pressure off of Tahad and Freeman and Overton, all of whom have to play. Feels like all three of those guys have to play at least 25 minutes for you right now. And Tahad, as you saw on Saturday, like this team's probably at its best when you find a way to let Tahad play 35 plus.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Who have we got, Drew?
Philly Fanatic.
Philly Fanatic is up. What's going on?
I'm doing great. I hunkered down in the house because I had a 27-degree wind chill. I want to pivot from – it's basketball, right?
Yeah.
Pivot from Auburn's great win to Alabama's loss with Maniakas and what Alabama's coach is comparing the EuroLeague to the G League. Well, I don't think you can compare them because, first off, in Europe, they don't have collegiate sports, right? So if you just, like, played high school pickup and you think you're good enough, they have the EuroLeague, which are basically clubs. And there's 20 teams in that league, and most of them are inter-country. So you have a small, like, Bosnia. Well, Bosnia isn't – it's not as big – I mean, it's probably smaller than most states in the U.S. as far as – and having people – so the fact that he is the best player in Bosnia doesn't mean that he's the best player or equal to somebody in the G League. So I think that the comparison he makes between the G League and EuroLeague is not valid.
No, he's saying what he's saying because they needed help on the inside and they were able to convince Charles Bediako, who played a G League game a week before, to come back and play. I mean, look, there's no question about why he's saying what he's saying.
And while I do think there is something to the fact that the NCAA weakened its position here by making exceptions when they started making exceptions for players who had played professional basketball overseas, players who previously weren't allowed to play college basketball at all, you know, were suddenly sort of welcomed into the sport, and then that blurred the lines, and then earlier this year, I mean, Bediako's not the first G Leaguer, right, to fight for his eligibility again, and by not taking a hard line on those guys, the NCAA,
he's the first to have signed an NBA contract.
He's the first one, yeah. I mean, he's the first one to challenge that sort of red line of the NCAA, but I think it's I mean, this feels like a team wanting to bolster its roster however it can, and thinking that they have an angle to use this guy without it breaking the rules.
It's going to be really interesting tomorrow, and
there is news about that.
Yeah, it's been a 10-day extension because of the lawyers not being able to get together because of the weather. So,
oh well, that's okay. Poor. Yeah. Or whoever, it just gives Bediako a couple more games to play.
Two more games, right? And that's 2 days before they come to Auburn, right? So it's 12 days before that game, 10-day extension. So there'll be a very interesting hearing, I guess, over there in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Or, yeah.
Let's say they approve that you could get players from the G League, right? So let's say Auburn wants a big man, but they don't have anyone that will be able to qualify to play at Auburn before. Can Auburn get somebody from the G League that played with another team?
Sure. I mean, but here's the problem. Getting them eligible and getting them, they would need to be eligible for this term. And see, that's where Bediako enrolling at Alabama was able to get in. Yeah, you wouldn't have to have somebody who had any relationship with your school before. It'd be just like the transfer portal. Yep. It'd be like finding anybody out there. The problem is going to be now, the biggest problem is Auburn doesn't have a spot.
Right.
But the second problem is, even if they had a spot, getting them in school now when they haven't been in school somewhere else for who knows how long.
Right.
Okay, well, let's say Auburn recruits people to play in the summer. It played for another school.
Oh, sure. They're going to be wide open. Everybody's going to be all over that if this is upheld
for
Bediako.
And this is why Philly Fanatic, the Bediako thing being postponed, is potentially damaging to some players out there, because I think if the NCAA had folded tomorrow, and if Bediako had been given full eligibility for the rest of this season, there were a lot of players that probably would have thought they're now eligible to play, assuming they can get enrolled,
yeah,
which could be tougher 10 days from now at a lot of schools around the country even if Badiaka were to win his hearing, that's been pushed back, and we'll see if the NCAA can. I mean, the NCAA won its initial in federal court, right? The NCAA was successfully able to argue its position against Badiaka. Badiaka moved to a potentially more sympathetic judge in
potentially.
I want to give the benefit of the doubt to, to his honor. You know, I want to give the benefit of the doubt here, but a potentially more sympathetic local judge, and
who just happens to be a season ticket holder and a longtime contributor.
It's just a coincidence, Bill.
Yeah. Bonus context from you guys here about it. Sure, but we'll see. You know, when I think that's a crucial thing here is that like. No one has actually, since this was moved to local court, no one has actually made an argument in front of a judge, right? Like the TRO is the judge being somewhat so it's like it's going to be important when it happens, but yeah, it's been pushed back 10 days because of the cold weather.
Is there going to be any age limit? Could a 28 or 29 year old guy play?
The NCAA does not have any age limit.
They just have to start the clock when they enroll.
Yeah, that's right. That is important.
But I mean,
as that can be challenged.
You know, we've seen guys stories about players, in their 40s, trying to play a little college football.
But in the case of players like Badiaka, who left college to go pursue the professional basketball. Opportunities.
I don't think that counts the same as like the mission.
No. But it doesn't.
That's been the only exception.
I don't think it pauses your eligibility clock. But one of Bediako's arguments is that he is within 5 years of his initial enrollment.
That is true.
He is still in his. You know, he enrolled five seasons ago and played 2 years at Alabama, and he's played professional basketball for 2 years, and now this would be his fifth year at Alabama. I wonder if schools will adhere to, like, if Badiaka were to win and teams were able to, you know, there were suddenly a lot more players eligible than we realized, I wonder if teams would start challenging or if players would start challenging that 5 year window as the next wall to come down.
It's amazing to imagine what you could accomplish if the leaders in college athletics sat down with players and the representatives and come to this thing that's called a agreement, right? And then we could have rules that are enforceable that wouldn't be challenged in court.
But they never wanted to do that because, you know, they didn't want to deal with the players. They wanted to have all the control.
I know.
And didn't think the players could do anything about it.
And too many of them still do. It's insane that we're continuing to go down this road for 6 or 7 years now. Amazing amount of bargaining power the NCAA and the conferences have lost.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
If they went to the table 6 or 7 years ago, think about the difference then to going to the table now and sitting down with those reps, right?
Well, you
amazing
know what? I
mean,
if they have just allowed the players to get something from the video games 20 years ago, I mean, who knows? I mean, we wouldn't have anything like we have now.
But we march along and we continue to let the courts – decide what is and what isn't going to happen in college athletics right now. And they're going to keep ruling, I'd say, 75% of the time, 80%
of the time. Most of
the time
it's going to be in favor of the players.
Right.
And I do think it's important, too, that while these rules and the successful challenges to these rules and the resulting player movement, like, it can make it seem – I mean, Bill, you follow the roster very closely. And, like, the Bill Cameron depth chart from – 12 months ago.
Oh, my goodness.
From 2 months ago.
You're going to have to get like a special computer to work it out every year now.
And that
so many changes.
And that can be discouraging to some folks who, you know, want to see these players sort of stick it out at the school that they chose on signing day. I would still say, all told, like, the product on the field in college football and college basketball is still great.
Yeah.
Like, I still find myself really – like, college basketball on Saturday was awesome. Up and down that slate. There's some really interesting matchups. Like, and the games are getting more important as you run out of conference games, and the races are tightening up as far as who's gonna win their various leagues. Like this thing is still strong on the court.
Yes,
it's just it's too bad that the rules seem so easy to challenge and win.
Yeah, and some of these rules were not valid.
And that's why
for antitrust matters.
Should have been.
But what's also important is now that we have the transfer portal, now that we're paying players, that talent is being spread out more. We're getting more competition, more teams with the ability to step up and compete for championships.
Sure, a la Indiana and Texas Tech. Yes. But can it continue? And I mean, the salaries, and I know they don't want to be called salaries, but I mean, the money the players are getting has just continued to grow and grow and grow. And you just wonder, can it continue growing at this pace before, I mean, some schools have to opt out. That's it.
Probably Auburn will be one of them, honestly. You know,
a lot of schools will be. Yeah. I mean, a lot of schools that you thought were haves. It's like may not have enough.
No, they do not.
All right.
Let's
get to our first break of hour number two. Right back with your calls. Who do we got hanging, Drew?
John.
John, hold on. You're up. When we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Good. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian. And let's get right to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I wanted to say the best line I heard have a question after this, but the best line I heard today was somebody said they were checking their phones all day to make sure a Tuscaloosa judge didn't rule that Alabama actually won that game Saturday night.
That's pretty good.
Well, Brian was just talking. I mean, we're just talking during the break, and it's like, well, you know, don't count out just about anything. We were wondering. I mean, the NCAA runs a tournament, and I think Alabama's going to be in. But it would be really interesting. I mean, this is the one thing the NCAA does control is the basketball tournament. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see if the NCAA said, well, we still think he's ineligible, so we say you can't play.
I think that would be very, very interesting. I had a question about Auburn's upcoming schedule. So the next five, I think, are home with Texas,
yes.
At Tennessee.
Yes.
Home Alabama, home Vandy, and at Arkansas.
Right.
Yep. With
A few weeks ago, that's just a segment you want to survive. And now I think if Auburn wants to make a run at that 4 or 5 line, gosh, I feel like going, even if you can go 3-2 in this stretch.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
I think would help you immensely.
Just hold serve at home, right? I mean, that's easier said than done when you've got Vanderbilt, Alabama, and Texas coming to Neville Arena, but still.
Yeah.
And just wanted your thoughts. I mean, what do you guys think about this next 5-game stretch? 3-2, I feel like I'd take it and run.
My feeling is this team is not going to go out there and play like they did at Florida every night. And I still think it has growing pains to go through. Still think there's going to be some ups and downs. I think they found the secret sauce. I just don't think it's I think it's hard to do that every single night. So
I agree.
But I think 3-2 is.
Oh, I think 3-2 is very, 3-2 is very makeable.
Yeah,
it's
I
very
do too.
Doable.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I would also say, John, Auburn can shoot it better than they shot it the other night.
When's the last time they shot well?
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you just feel like
2 weeks,
that a game is coming where Auburn's going to shoot the ball better from the perimeter.
February 7th, I believe, will be that game at Neville Arena.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time we went to Thompson Bowling and had any sort of offense? Woo. It feels like we're clawing for 50.
Whatever.
A lot of that's got to do with Tennessee's defense. Yeah.
The team played well, like, right before the COVID season ended, right? They won. They went there and won a really impressive-looking game. But I think for the most part, you're right. That's been, especially under Rick Barnes, that's been one of the toughest places to go in the SEC. And I think that I think this team, now that they've picked up a couple of road wins, I mean, they need to hold serve at home. They need, like, I think at home you hope that they can, you know, they can build on what they've done the last couple of weeks and be a really tough out for anyone who comes to Neville Arena the rest of the year. And then on the road, you know, we'll see. Like, what they did this past week was remarkable. Is it something they can sustain? Because those two games played out, I think it was really surprising how Ole Miss and Florida, like, the games resembled each other in the way, like, Auburn's game plan against Ole Miss was kind of what Auburn, maybe that's just Auburn's identity now. Like that's how they're going to play. It's
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's leaning on the post being really physical and having a couple of them, because that is one spot where I still hear people say like, oh, you know, Auburn would be great to have like a rim protector or another big, and it's like, I think they've got the numbers in the post between Jovich and Murphy and the Keisha, you know, and Keyshawn Hall and Sebastian, you've got front court minutes. And you've maybe got more of them than some other teams in the league. Like you can ask those guys to go full speed and sub them out and try to wear other teams down. You outplayed Florida's front court.
Yeah, well,
on Saturday
you look at your roster, and we're talking about a seven man rotation. What's your strength? Your strength is more inside than it is outside. So I mean, you got to play to your strength.
Yeah, Keyshawn Hall, and you know, working inside, and hitting the boards.
I love what we're seeing out of Keyshawn Murphy now. And he's talking about, you know, he wasn't really healthy last year and wasn't healthy at the start of this year.
But boy, he's an
athletic guy.
So quick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call, John. 334-321-1300. Lou's text, too. Well, text, if you get a chance, give us a call back. Love to hear from you. Again, we're approaching the bottom of the hour. You want to go ahead and let's talk a little bit about your Monday musings,
let's do it.
Brian.
I talked about today. I wrote about the playoff again. Disappointed in what the leaders of college football, which is basically the SEC, Big Ten, and the ESPN,
the continuation of the 12 team,
and not just that, but they tweaked the formula now.
It's ridiculous. I mean, Miami wouldn't have been in,
right? Which is, to me, as you said, ridiculous that. And everybody's okay with that. Like, nobody's out there, you know, saying this is crazy, right?
What would you, if you had the magic wand, what's the Brian Matthews playoff format?
16 teams, every game at home until the finals. Buys.
I don't want any buys.
Any rules about inclusion for 16?
I like the idea of automatic bids and having play-in games. I think that's fun, but you don't have to have them. I'd be fine with just getting the Power Four champions in there, and then everybody else is a 12, qualifiers.
Yeah, I think you need to keep the Power Four. I think you need to keep the Power Four in there. I would be just as good with a BCS type formula, and let's just take the top 16 teams.
Yeah, I could see that,
because. I mean, I guess you'd then have to have, and in case a Power Four champion isn't in the top 16, then they get in.
The other thing I want to see is I don't understand why people
they wouldn't be in the top 16.
We're not going to change seeding.
Well, Duke wouldn't be. That's right.
We're not going to change seeding because of conference affiliation. Well, why not? I don't want to see if Auburn and Alabama
play. They try
play,
to do it in every other sport.
Right. Well, why wouldn't you want to do that? Well, why do you want rematches in the first or second round if you can't avoid them?
I mean, why does football
try to divide it up?
Yeah, I mean,
right? Match up the SEC and the Big Ten.
I mean, man, they basketball and in baseball, they try to keep teams from,
as long as it's not a move
again.
That takes away a home field advantage from a team. I'm all for making little tweaks if you can.
I kind of like 12 because
this is the last year of 12.
Part of me wants to hold on to the smaller numbers in the playoffs and not grow the thing. Here's my big problem with 12. My big problem with 12 now is that I think we've seen through 2 years of this that the bye
too long off
is not the
one in seven buys.
Yeah, like it's not
top
it's,
four seeds well, in the tournament
teams,
are 1-7.
They're not playing forever.
It's the reward that
no,
it probably
no,
should
not
be.
At all.
No, you sit at home for a month and then you go to some dome. Thousands of miles away.
And
it's ridiculous.
And you play a team that just won a game a week ago. Like that just played won a game.
A team that has knocked the rust off if they had any. And you've got rust.
Exactly.
I went back and looked.
The postseason lasts too long.
And it'll be longer next year. I went back and looked.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be about now.
Those
you
top
know, the 25th
four,
or something like
those
that of January.
Top, yeah. Yeah. It is. Today, January 25th. Those top four seeds average traveling 1,379 miles. They set out a whole month and then
travel 1400
almost 1,400
miles.
That's their reward for being a top four seed.
That's no reward.
That is
at
absolutely
all.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I wish there was a way to crown a champion before Like, I mean, I'd look, New Year's Day would be great. I actually think that the folks who are...
You could do it. Starting week zero, I mean, it's easy to do it.
Not while Bob Iger breathes air.
No, right? That's true.
Not while Disney has a financial stake.
But they could at least get it done by the before the 15th. They could get it done before the 15th. Because then you got playoffs. You've got NFL playoffs.
I think there's something really romantic sounding about like semifinals on Christmas night. Finals on New Year's Day.
Oh, I'd love it.
I think that'd be awesome. I think the thought of the
pageantry. I mean, yes. It's like here it is.
The two semifinals on Christmas night and a championship a week later, like, would be awesome. I just don't think. I don't know if there's an industry wide push for something like that.
I also wrote about what we talked about Stephen Pearl and that team. How well they've done last week on the road, but musically, our journey is going to begin with a friendly jab from Groucho Marx.
All right.
And this goes back 53 years, 1973.
Oh, I know.
Go for it.
Don't shoot me. I'm only the piano player.
That's amazing.
Oh, only the piano player?
This man is a computer. Oh, he's amazing.
So I thought when you talked about Groucho Marx in the 70s, you were going to talk about Queen naming albums after Marx Brothers movies. Night at the Opera.
That's another good one. That's where I thought
you were going with Groucho Marx in the 70s.
Yeah, and of course, this album has...
73.
Has a...
Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player?
Yeah. It features
Daniel and Crocodile
The Rock. Go West Marx Brothers movie posters on the album cover for this one. But yes, included Elton John's first number one single, Crocodile Rock, had Daniel on it, helps kind of really...
Golly, that tells you that... Rocket Man and what was the other really big one he'd had before?
Goodbye Yellow Brick Road came out that year. There were two albums in 73. And between those two albums, he played where?
Well, I'll tell you.
No, Dodger Stadium?
He played at a lot of places. He played at Auburn.
He did, between those two albums.
No, 73. Brian. No, I disagree with that.
Okay.
Because I bought the album the week before Elton played at the Coliseum. It came out the week that Elton John was at the Coliseum is when Goodbye Yellow Brick Road came out.
I know that well because
he opened his concert at Beardy. Well, it wasn't Beardy's. At Memorial Coliseum.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he opened his concert at Memorial Coliseum with Funeral for a Friend, Love Lies Bleeding. That was that.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
A lot of the people there in the audience had no idea what it was because, I mean, the album had been out for days.
Yeah.
The album was released 5 October 1973.
Okay, and when did he play at Auburn?
October 22nd. Okay. Yeah, I had that backwards.
Well, so it had been out actually 17 days. Maybe it wasn't available locally. Yep. Maybe it wasn't at Cali. What was the record store that I bought it at?
Took a little while to get here?
Yeah. Now, maybe it did. But, I mean, I know that, yes, it was a brand new album when Elton played.
Yep. But, amazing. Of course, I was only six then. But still, you think about these great moments in history. You wish, and you were there. I wish I could have been there for something like that. It must have been amazing. But incredible career. I don't know if people know this, but now he is fourth all time in record sales. Right?
That makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm sure we can probably name the top ones ahead of him.
Beatles.
Yep.
Michael.
Yeah, probably. Yep. Elvis.
Yep. That's the three above him. That's it. And Elton John's next.
Pretty good list. Yep. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. It's Sir Elton John, knighted. He's in the Hall of Fame, Music Hall of Fame, Songwriters Hall of Fame. Just an incredible career. 300 million records sold. He's also the 19th EGOT winner, which is Emmy, Grammy,
Oscar.
Oscar, Tony. Mm-hmm. So he's won all those. It's just amazing career. Yeah.
Won the Oscar for the Lion King song,
yeah,
I believe.
Sure
Can You Feel the Love Tonight?
Life. Yeah.
That's right.
I think might have been Can You Feel the Love Tonight.
Well, yeah, I think you're
right. But it's what a run.
Yep. All right. Fun. So again, every week Brian has his Monday musings. Just one of the many things you'll want to check out there at auburnsports.com.
Lots of coverage of the portal, even though it's kind of closed out now. Yep. But we can't say that for 100% sure because you never know. And plus, there's still thousands of players in it. So
yeah.
Anything can happen over the next until we get to, I guess, August, whatever.
Yeah, till September 1st. Classes start.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Still time for you to join in. 3-3-4-3-3-4-3-2-1-1390 as we continue here with the Monday Drive.
888-281-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday evening. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Got about 15 minutes or so left. Love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise. All right, Brian, I was going to ask you because, I mean, we're talking about the players that Auburn had gotten in the portal, 39 additions. Yes. Any word? I mean, there's been a lot of interest. Just wondering what's going on with the Auburn receiver who went to Missouri and is not enrolled.
I wasn't even aware of this. So this, you're breaking news to me. I did not hear.
No, Horatio Fields, right?
Horatio, yeah. Horatio. He signed apparently with Missouri, but then when they added another big name receiver. Missouri is, you know, multiple people have said he's nowhere to be found at Missouri.
Nice pickup for Eli, by the way, going again, because there was some disappointment that Prabula moved on and didn't stick around to go get Austin Simmons as a replacement, to go find, you know, a guy that folks were very excited about at Ole Miss going into last season, and to go get him, I think is a nice move by Drinkwitz. Caden Lee following Austin Simmons, and then according to reports from different Missouri outlets.
Yeah, they're saying he will not enroll.
Yeah, Fields, there at Missouri. Fields has not arrived on campus. Most of the transfers who have signed with Missouri are available to search in the student database.
Mm-hmm.
Horatio Fields is not in that database.
Interesting.
And yeah, there's no word on where he could end up if he's not going to be at Missouri next year.
Well, you know, if you look at wide receiver for Auburn, that is one of the areas, in
my
opinion.
They were still looking for a guy.
Right, where they maybe came up a player short.
Uh-huh.
And I think they were looking for another number one type receiver.
Right.
But, you know, maybe Horatio, who can be a really great possession receiver.
Absolutely.
And can really fill not only an important role on the field, but he was a leader the minute he stepped on campus back last year at this time. So I think that would be great if it could work out in that way, but I have not heard anything about it on my end yet. So.
The other questions I would have is, we'd heard, you know, that Dallas Walker was trying to pursue an extra year of eligibility. I think Chris Murray as well.
Yeah, we don't have answers on either of those, right?
And those would, and those are the other two areas where Auburn would love to have another player. Man, if they could get a couple of those, you know, I mean, any of those guys would be a bonus. Fields, Walker, or Murray.
I feel like Auburn wide receivers, I think they came up a player short there, in my opinion. Definitely defensive line, especially nose guard, they came up a player short, in my opinion. And definitely at edge or buck or whatever you want to call it now, I think they're a player or two short there, to be honest with you. So
they're better.
But we'll
really
see. Jared Smith may be one of the best players in the country as a sophomore. We just don't know. Same with J.J. Falk, and they got a freshman coming in who could end up being a great
And the transfer from Ole Miss that we were talking about a little bit earlier. Like I think
Sean
right.
Yeah,
I think between the Ole Miss transfer and Jared Smith, you feel like you've got some players who can maybe do it, but not.
But man, if you could get a proven commodity back,
you got Walter Mathis from LSU, who a player that played as a younger player, but a player you think is ready to take a next step there. So, and then you mentioned the kid from Ole Miss too. So, they have some options there. It's not like they're
No.
But you kind of have to project a little bit. You don't have, this guy's going to step in and be a player for Auburn right away.
334-321-1390. Let's get back to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Jason is up next. Hey, Jason.
Hey, guys. Unbelievable win Saturday. I had to go to a wedding. I always record games that I'm going to miss and avoid all contact with anybody so I can watch it and not know what happened. This game, I was like, I know we're going to get beat. I'll just keep up with the score as it's going. And as I'm following along, I'm like, good grief, I'm missing a classic. But I came home and watched the whole thing all over again. It was kind of fun to know that we were going to win. So that was cool.
No, yeah, and it wasn't a fluke.
No, not at all. Hey, I wanted to weigh in on the roster thing. So, Brian, you said something that I think you're echoing what Steven said, but I'm seeing conflicting stuff on this. So let me tell you what I see. I see 11 guys on our roster plus a walk-on is 12. I look over to Alabama's roster, and I see 13 guys plus Bediako gives them 14.
You're supposed to have 15.
Right. And
I think the new rule is you can have 15.
Yes.
So why is Steven saying that we didn't have room at mid-year to add any players?
They put all the walk-ons on scholarships. So
yeah,
I think preseason
they'd fill things up with the walk-ons.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah, okay, so. Well, that explains it. That, yeah. You really helped me with that. That's it, because you can't take them back off scholarships.
Right,
so.
Right.
At least not until the academic year is done.
Right, right. Okay, well, obviously he'll learn from that mistake. The whole Bediako thing is, it's not what anybody wants college basketball to be like.
No.
We don't want to have to pull guys from the G League.
Even Nate Oates said that after the game. He said, it's not what everybody wants, but, I mean, how can we not do it?
Yeah. We know how Nate works. It's kind of like the thing with Todd. To me, I compare it to Todd Golding. You know, what he did with Dabo. I mean, yes, he knows he's not going to get punished, just like Nate knows he can get away with it, but is it the right thing to do? Neither one of them are the right thing to do. And, I'm disappointing these coaches that they're just taking advantage of I don't have to worry about getting punished, so I'll just do whatever I want. It's frustrating me, and it's ruining the college game.
Well, it's surely not helping it. I mean, no question. Yeah, what Pete Golding texting a player who's in class at Clemson and then finding out what it takes to buy him out and pay him more is just that is
wild.
Yeah, it's terrible, actually. It really is.
Yep. Hey, guys, thanks. Brian, thanks for helping me out with the info.
Thanks for the call, Jason. 334-321-1390. Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of people wondering that as well. So glad we were able to mention that on the air.
And, you know, the rule changed where you could, I guess in the past, maybe take somebody off and put somebody on.
Well, if a player was medicaled,
mm-hmm.
you used to be able to do that.
Right.
So, I mean, you had a situation like with a Purim.
Right.
If he's out for the year, in the past, you'd be able to replace that scholarship,
right.
But not now. So,
which again is a interesting rule. You wonder if you could challenge it in some way.
Yeah, the reason that was put in is apparently there were a couple of schools that medical guys out that didn't feel like they were done. Injury wise, just looking to try to find an extra scholarship, just trying to close a loophole.
Yep.
Which there's so many loopholes in the NCAA now. I mean, it's crazy.
It is, and I don't want to keep hammering it home. But if you want to have rules that are sustainable and can resist the challenge in the court of law, you got to sit down and you got to collectively bargain.
Yeah. No, I don't know with all the control the players have now, why do they want to do that?
Yeah, the only way to get them to do that is to give them more money, right?
I don't know.
Well, come to the table, right? Yeah. I mean, you gotta have something that all parties are in on. I mean, the NCAA did have the power to make this sort of thing an employment based deal.
Yes, they did.
Without the players.
Mm-hmm. Before all this. And that's long gone. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Monday Drive.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the Monday Drive. As we mentioned earlier, Dan gonna be on the road for the rest of the week.
Yeah, going up to Marshall on Wednesday, and then Coastal Carolina this weekend. So the Trojans will be bouncing around the Sun Belt a little bit.
How do those teams match up?
Marshall's good. Marshall's one of the top teams in the Sun Belt this year. They won the league a couple years ago before their coach got the Tennessee job, and they had sort of a rebuilding year last year. But this year they seem to be really buying into. Their coach comes from Transylvania. The D3, not Europe.
Oh,
Transylvania University.
That would have been much cooler. Yes, Count Who?
I think it's in Pennsylvania. I don't know exactly where.
That was the alma mater. The only reason I knew that's really that there is a college there.
Yeah.
That was CM Newton.
Okay.
The former Alabama coach and
nice.
Kentucky AD.
So Marshall hired a coach from Transylvania, and she's winning in year two, and so there's Ark State's at the top of the league with one loss. Troy, Georgia Southern, Marshall all have two. So this is a battle of two of the better teams in the conference. Coastal Carolina's scrappy. They've had some injury some tough luck this year with player availability, but they're always a team looking to give Troy their best shot too. And as I mentioned, Troy, 9 Sun Belt road games this season, 7 of them will be in the books by the time this trip is over with a month to play. We just had the two that we finished the season with at the end of February, so pretty long break between league road games. A lot of home games in February for Troy, including some games against the bottom of the league. So an opportunity
that should be good.
An opportunity for Troy, seemingly, but they got to go and win these games this upcoming week.
Well, try to stay warm.
That's the thing, man. We're in downtown Huntington. There's actually a couple things I wanted to go see, but it's single digits or zero.
Dan doesn't want to be mistaken for a bear.
No,
if he goes out,
take me down with a trank dart, take me back to the zoo. No,
if
I'll
you're lucky,
I will. I may be reading books and drinking cocoa in the hotel lobby a lot this week, which is that's okay with me. I'll check in with you guys and see, I'm sure
you can find some things to binge.
I'm on board. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Brian? What's on tap for you, and what do you know that coming up, anything specifically coming up there at AuburnSports.com?
Well, we'll be over for basketball, of course, and Stephen Pearl tomorrow. Get ready for the game against Texas back home at Neville Arena.
That's an early game. That's a 6 o'clock game.
It's amazing.
It feels like all the games have been lately here at home. But yeah, very 6 o'clock game Wednesday night.
It is hard though for people coming from out of town to get here in time, so it'll be a rush. I'm sure.
It's tough for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
sometimes,
right.
I have to remind Lane, "Hey, Lane, I'm coming to the game," as because the game's already started. There's no way I can get there.
And we'll continue wrapping up the portal stuff. I've got some stories coming there, and baseball, like we mentioned, two weeks from Friday is opening day.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I hope the bitterly cold weather gets out of the way.
It'd be nice.
Before February 13th.
Yes, very
but,
nice.
But yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah, no question. I mean, a lot of excitement about this baseball team. Preseason top 10 predictions all over the place.
Yeah, and still got to figure out the pitching staff.
Yep.
And that may be an ongoing thing as we get to the season and get going here. We'll see. Because they got a whole bunch of arms. They just got to figure out where everybody's going to fit in. And sometimes you can't do that just with preseason practice. You just got to get out there and start playing.
Yep, so looking forward. How does everybody keep up with everything you guys have got going?
Check us out, AuburnSports.com. Many, many updates every day on our website there. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter, such as X at BMATAU.
All right, Brian.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. Always great to have BMAT in. And, Dan will be out. Coach Don Dunn will be in tomorrow. We should have Andy Burcham joining us early on. And then Jake Crane in hour number two. So we hope we'll hear from you as well.
Yeah, Andy was fantastic this weekend. If you get the chance to track down some of Andy's calls from Auburn's win in Gainesville, just great work, as always, by the voice of the Tigers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A huge win that Auburn will look to try to add to when they get back home. All right, the music's playing. We're out of time here on the Monday edition of The Drive. Again, our thanks to BMAT coming in. Dan, safe travels. We will be back with you tomorrow, so hope you'll join us then. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.